proceed to the third case of the day, Peabody Coal versus Hallmark. Mr. Blanton.
May I please the court? My name is W.C. Blanton. I'm still representing Peabody Coal Company and Old Republic and the Good Locate. The case before you raises two purely medical issues. The first is whether Mr. Goodloe's 1984 PO2 reading on his arterial blood gas study is real. That is, does it in fact demonstrate an impairment of oxygen transfer from the lung alveoli to his blood? The claimant had the burden of proof on that issue. The second issue is whether, if PO2 number is real, is it the result of dust inhalation or something else? And Peabody and Old Republic had the burden of proof on that.
Did any doctor other than Dr. Peters offer an opinion on the meaning of the combination of symptoms that Goodloe had in 1984?
Yes.
Well, in particular, did any other doctor offer an opinion that took into account a PO 2 of 45, the shortness of breath without exertion, the increase in red blood cells, the clubbed fingers, and the increased chest diameter? And where in the record would we find those opinions?
There are a large number of symptoms that are talked about. There are specific things in the record at the appendix to our brief, or in the appendix at 148 through 50, which is Dr. Howard's deposition at 1618. He testified that the evidence is that Mr. Goodloe does not have polycythemia, and Dr. Howard is the expert and Dr. Peters is not, but he clearly commented on that symptom that Dr. Peters and the ALJ relied on.
But is there any evidence in the record contrary to these findings? In other words, if they never observed Goodloe, Dr. Howard and Dr. Stewart, what basis would they have to disagree here?
The same basis that this court has recognized in hundreds of black lung cases, that pulmonary physicians who are experts are entitled to review the entire medical record, take into account the reported physical findings by others, and draw medical conclusions from it. That's what pulmonary medicine doctors do in large measure as part of their regular practice, which is consult with respect to patients whom they have not seen. Dr. Howard and Dr. Stewart both accepted as valid Dr. Peters' commentary that Mr. Goodloe exhibited in 1984 club fingers and barrel chest. I would point out that when Dr. Howard was asked, if this person has a PO2 of 45, what would he exhibit? He did not say club fingers in a barrel chest. What he did say in the record in his deposition at pages 5 through 6, which is in the appendix at 137 through 38, if he in fact has a PO2 of 45, if that's a real number, the physical finding that he would expect to find is cyanotic conditions, i.e. blue skin, blue fingernails, neither of which were reported by Dr. Peters. So I believe that the physicians have fairly accepted Dr. Peters' findings, pointed out that his analysis of the blood work is wrong, and that he does not report the one symptom that the most qualified doctor in the case said you would see if this were a real number. I think they have fairly met that, and it's in the record. In fact, of the three doctors who testified, the ALJ properly found that two of them are qualified to opine on both of these issues because they have pulmonary medicine expertise. The original ALJ said Dr. Peters has none. This ALJ would not go that far, said that may be, and simply ignored what his pulmonary opinions were. Both of the doctors who have pulmonary expertise said they would not rely on the 1984 data because there was too much of a drop. It was too dramatic. It was inherently incredible for Mr. Goodloe to go from phenomenal blood gases in 1979 to horrible ones in 1984 with no explanation, no further dust exposure. Both of them said, the way, said, I would not accept it. I would have him retested, Dr. Howard said. I wouldn't accept that number.
Too late for that.
Well, it wasn't at the time.
Yeah.
This was 1984. This was before hearing.
The test was verified. I mean, wouldn't that mean they took some of the other blood and tested that again?
No, there is no, I believe your statement that it was verified is not accurate. The record is very clear. Dr. Peter said, I didn't believe it either. I ordered the test. I didn't do the test. I wasn't there when they did the test. I didn't believe it. I checked with the lab, and they double-checked, and I said, okay, we don't know. There is only one report of a blood gas. It's attached to Dr. Peter's letter, and it is one of the exhibits. But there's only one report of an analysis. I do not believe there is any basis to believe that there was additional blood that was tested a second time, because there is no report of that. Dr. Peters did not explain what double checking means. He didn't say who he talked to. He didn't say, there is nothing in the record about what this verification consisted of, other than Dr. Peters says some unknown person told me they double checked it. Dr. Peters, who is demonstrably lacking in knowledge about pulmonary medicine, that was okay for him. The two doctors who know something about pulmonary medicine said it would not have been good enough for us. If it was my patient and I wanted to know what his condition is, I would have had another blood sample drawn. It takes about 2 minutes.
Are you contending that it takes special expertise to observe shortness of breath and other physical symptoms that Goodloe displayed?
No, I think family physicians are perfectly qualified to do that, but I would point out that there is absolutely nothing about being 65 years old, gaining 25 pounds in the last 5 years, and having an absolutely sedentary lifestyle after ending work that would not lead you to be shortness of breath, whether you had lung disease or heart disease or anything else.
Of course, you also have the clubbed fingers. You also have the increase in red blood cells.
The increase in red blood cells, Dr. Howard, who's a pulmonary specialist, says is not indicative of true lung disease, does not indicate polycythemia. The club digits, which are reported in Dr. Peter's letter to Mr. Vanstone, are glaringly absent from his office notes. It's a standard reported finding by family physicians.
Do you think he fabricated it?
I don't know. All I know is it's not documented.
Do you think that blood test is it your argument that was inadmissible as evidence?
No, I think it's perfectly admissible, but it has to demonstrate.
Perfectly admissible?
No, I don't mean. I mean, it's evidence. It was taken. But it has to. The issue is not whether it was admissible.
But your argument is really about admissibility. You think it's so unreliable, it shouldn't have been considered by the trier of fact.
No, I don't believe that. I didn't say that the last time we were
here. I don't know why you don't say it, because otherwise you're just left arguing over the weight to be given it.
No, I understand that, and that's what this court said in the first Goodloe case that was the issue. But the question is, who makes the call, and what can he base it on? In this case, the ALJ said, because Dr. Peters ordered the test, and the other doctors who know something about medicine didn't, I will give more weight to his opinion. I think that is squarely afoul of this court's rule in McCandless, and all of its cases that say that there has to be some rational connection between the relationship between the patient and the doctor on the medical issue in question.
Isn't that a little unfair? Because it seems to me that none of the other experts disputed any of the objective physical findings or the meaning of any of the findings. And I think you conceded that early on in your argument.
No, I think they did dispute. They said that, Dr. Howard said that these physical findings do not validate the PO2 number, and Dr. Howard said the blood work on that Dr. Peters thought was polycythemia does not do that either. So I think they did dispute it, and they also said, as a matter of pulmonary medicine, I would not rely on this number given a background of a much higher number only 5 years earlier. And therefore, They would not have relied on it. They would have retested. And the issue that Judge Posner raises is not, is it admissible, but how can the ALJ evaluate the opinions about whether a doctor should rely on it and whether, as a matter of medicine, it actually is sufficient to demonstrate an impairment of oxygen transfer from the lung alveoli to blood. The two experts said no. The ALJ said yes. And the primary reason I believe that he did so is because he believes that it's perfectly normal for ABG to drop that much in 5 years, because he believes that pneumoconiosis, dust disease, can progress after exposure ends. And there's no medical evidence in the record to support that. And my time's up. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Blanton. Mr. Vanstone?
I'm Jack Vanstone. Please, the court, I think counsel has misinterpreted what the record shows. In the first place, while there was some question about the drop, there's no testimony by Dr. Howard or Dr. Stewart that this blood gas study wasn't correct. There's no evidence in here to invalidate the blood gas study. The blood gas study is, you know, a technician takes blood and puts it in the machine reads it. And it's a matter of weighing the evidence. The counsel is talking about the difference in expertise. Dr. Peters is family doctor. He's not an expert, but neither one of these doctors disagreed with him. In fact, one doctor said that he's surprised with 33 or 35 years on the cutting machine that he doesn't have a lot more. And the other one said, Dr. Howard said, that he possibly could have black lung. You take this into the context. This case was filed in 1979 originally, and this comes under the interim presumptions of 727.
How much money is the Goodloe's estate asking for?
I asked counsel that, and I think we're talking about
47,000, did you say?
Less than 100, but I don't know
if that's true. I'm not privy to when they started and when they stopped. Can be figured out.
This case has been going on for 23 years, and the total amount in controversy is $100,000?
Yes.
I don't understand the economics of that. But
that's the reason why I don't take black lung cases anymore.
I think you made that representation last time, didn't you, Mr.?
Yes. I reflected on it, and it was this case. When I came back 5 years ago on this case, I said, no more. Hmm. And I don't know anybody in my area that does.
Are these cases beginning to diminish?
I'm not sure. I do get inquiries once or twice a year, but I turn them away, so you know, if I took them, I don't know how many I would have.
I just wondered, because I don't know, presumably, is there still coal mining?
Oh, yes.
But presumably they have better filtration.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Hope so.
Okay, well, that was just a digression.
Unless you have some questions.
No.
Okay. Did you have any rebuttal to that?
I don't have any rebuttal, but I do want to respond to Mr. Stoser's remarks about the economics. It is a crazy system. I'm sorry to have spoken from the table. I know that's not proper. But the government takes the position that
the parties may not settle these cases. You can apply to an adjudicatory body and say, can we please settle this? And frankly, the economics, when that has been done, we have found that it costs more to try to get permission to settle the case, because that would go at least to the Circuit Courts of Appeals. To be allowed to settle costs more than to just either win or lose it.
You mean approval would you mean there'd be a right of appeal to the Circuit Court, or you need some approval in the settlement process?
You have to get approved by one of the bodies in the Department of Labor and the United States. The solicitor will fight those, and if an ALJ approves a settlement, they will fight it. If the board would approve it, they will fight it, and we would wind up here fighting with the government, and the issue would be the government against the parties who want to settle. And we have cost it out, and we can't afford to fight with the government to try to settle.
Are those settlements available on a regional basis, or must one go to Washington for that?
You could apply to the ALJ to whom it was assigned. They won't do it. They know that the government will fight. The statute says, the regulations say you can't settle.
So the ALJs won't invite a settlement?
No. You can't settle. You just have to ride them until they're over.
Sounds unconstitutional to me.
We think so.
Thank you to both counsel and state's opponents.